No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it. No, You Tell It is a series that switches up the storytelling. So each performer writes a true life tale and then, switching with a partner, performs the other person's story, giving everyone involved the chance to share their own stories and experience someone else's.
The second half of our Prom Queen show marks an important Know You Tell It first. Story coach, social media savant, and forthcoming Prom Queens anthology editor, Tim Lindner, took on a new role as storyteller, trading tales with the fabulous Ricky Richards. Give a listen as story coach Pachenda Bao gets to know our storytellers before they perform each other's true prom tale.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Chenda. I have to speak loudly or I'm going to be in big trouble with Miss Kelly Jean.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like the worst.
We are the quietest.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm so excited that you're in this seat and we're going to hear Ricky read your story. You wear so many hats. You are a writer, an editor, and just all around like reliable photographer, like everything. And but you have a book that you edited called The Book of Life After Death. And so I was wondering if you would tell us a little bit about this book.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually coming up on its second birthday soon. But a lot with my writing and just my interest in general, I'm very interested in going to dark places. And I think that a lot of ways, if you go into those dark places, explore them, you can come out more positive and really, you know, experience life in a different way. And I really wanted to hear, you know, I know my grief experiences, I know what I've lost, but I really wanted to collect stories and poems from other people and their experiences across different cultures to see what's both the commonalities and the differences between them.
Amazing. Yeah. And the book is available?
It is available through Tolson Books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great, check it out. All right. Let's cut. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Okay.
To help you embody your partner's story on stage tonight, you had a rehearsal with a Know You Tell It story director. What's something that surprised you about the rehearsal process?
Great question. I actually have zero theater experience. So like the stage and the rehearsal process was all very new to me. So I learned a ton. And Kelly Jean gave me a lot of great feedback and a lot of good suggestions that I hadn't thought of. And then I brought in some of my own little secret flares that I'll bring to embody Ricky's story later. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, here is Prom Night with Rain by Tim Lindner and performed by Ricky Richards.
Prom with Rain. Hi, Timmy. A young chubby girl named Ashley with frizzy hair and a gap in her teeth said, approaching me cautiously. Hey, Ashley. I said, holding my left wrist with my right hand across my tummy. My buzzed haircut started to grow out, revealing cowlicks in the front and the back. The rash is bad this year, huh? She was talking about my poison ivy. Every year in elementary school, I awoke with a rash all over my body. In the early years, I stayed home, but once we discovered it wasn't contagious, my parents sent me to school. I'm trying not to scratch it, I tensed, adjusting my glasses. Calamine lotion smearing. And Jamie and her stupid friends keep calling me Poison Ivy Boy. Whatever, it'll be gone in a few days, sympathized Ashley. I'll never be as pretty as them. Shut up. It was the 90s, and bullying was still allowed. Over the years, we evolved, appearing more normal, especially once we started mixing schools in middle and high school. I lost the glasses, and some people even thought I was cute. I was smart, just different enough, and had friends across different cliques, even if I couldn't see them without my glasses. Ashley had her Lainey Boggs and She's All That moment in 10th grade. crispy bangs, highlights, tank tops on top of tank tops from Hollister.
She looked amazing.
Still, neither of us could really shake the insecurities we developed in our early years at school. Call it trauma bonding or even codependency. We felt safe together. Her new look in 10th grade inspired my say anything moment. Okay, I didn't have the stereo, but standing outside her house in the pouring rain, I shot my shot. I'm outside, I texted. LOL, it's raining. I know, but I just wanted to come here and tell you something. I'm watching American Idol. I didn't respond and walked home through our neighborhood.
Aww.
I knew she liked me. How could she not? I'd become a pack sun wearing hottie with puka shells around my neck. We both grew into our bodies, our personalities, but we were still the Duffs, designated ugly fat friends. My nickname had evolved from Poison Ivy Boy to Big Ass Alien Head, while Ashley became, who's your friend? I called her Rain. Once I got home and dried off, I signed on to AOL. Welcome. I went to the only place I knew where I could express myself freely in the privacy of my own home. My public blog that everyone would read. 9:45 p.m. Feeling defeated. Ugh, my crush Rain totally rejected me tonight. I'm so sad. Maybe I have a better shot with Avenger or Missile. Whatever, don't find me. Closing the window, I navigated to the favorites menu and clicked on Bubble Pop. The page loaded slowly, one image at a time, with the bold HTML header reading, Men Kissing Men. I scrolled for a bit, frequently looking around to make sure my parents didn't wake up before shutting down. I gave people unique nicknames on my blog, writing longingly about my male crushes and being obvious enough with the girls that people would think I was normal. I was dying to be found out, but with Will and Grace and Matthew Shepard's murder dominating the queer narrative at the time, I didn't want to be a gay best friend, or worse, end up dead. Missile was Michelle Missile, a senior cheerleader. Avenger was a male cheerleader with a red Dodge Avenger, the hottest car, and the hottest girlfriend. Goodbye. The next day, everyone at school knew that my Rain post was about Ashley, and she found me immediately. I had no idea, she said. No idea, I shot back. You used to have the biggest crush on me. This isn't new. I know, but we're best friends, she said. It's cool. We can be friends. I gripped my books wrapped in brown paper bags. It's cool. And it was cool. We were at that phase in high school where we drank vodka and orange lava burst in a McDonald's parking lot, smoking weed in the woods. The two of us would end nights together parked outside my parents' house. We didn't need a relationship to ruin our friendship. And people were starting to like us, so it was probably best not to cause any drama. Senior year came, and Ashley and I were both dateless to prom, despite having partnered up for the 8th grade dance, the junior cotillion. We had numerous crushes since the Rain incident. On a random trip to the mall, she looked at me in the Dollar Tree and said, should we just go together? As I fidgeted with deflated foil balloons. The girl that rejected me earlier in high school was now asking me to prom. What I wanted to say was, I want to go with John. Or maybe Andy with the red Dodge Avenger remembers me, even though he graduated 3 years ago. Pick me up and take me away to another life. What I said was, let's do it. And we did the whole thing. including hot afternoon dates to the tanning salon. After one session, the two of us walked our sweaty bodies dripping in oil to Ashley's car, eyelids white from the peepers, and drove home. "I can't wait to get out of here," I said. "These are the best years of our lives," Ashley would argue. "I really hope not," I'd say from the passenger seat. "Is this really that bad?" "This is great. I didn't mean that." But I did mean that. I meant that I hated pretending to fit in with these people just so they'd only jokingly make fun of me, as friends did. I hated that I couldn't go to prom with a boy. And even if I could, I wouldn't be able to find one. I remember being in Men's Warehouse with my dad, getting measured in size for my suit. I knew Ashley would be wearing black, and I'd go with a classic look. But I leafed through the different patterns. Paisley, checked, striped, all the different colors. I imagined myself in all purple to contrast the tan diagonal stripes of my tie. "You look so grown up," Dad said while I looked at myself in the three-way mirror with my fitted black and white suit. "Ready for the big day?" "What? Oh, yeah, I guess. We'll have fun." When I get to prom weekend afterwards, I thought, looking forward to shutting my thoughts off with weed and alcohol. When I'd come out to my dad later in life, he'd said, "I'd love you even if you had three heads." I turned away from the mirrors, taking one more look at the colors, and wondered if I'd get married one day. It was raining on prom night, but this time I had an umbrella and Ashley let me inside. She looked beautiful when she opened the door. Bangs straightened, falling right below her eyebrows, wearing an elegant black dress. We both looked like we'd spent the last 2 months on a beach vacation. We knew each other so well, but I was still nervous. Our parents knew each other and photographed us in the house since it was so rainy outside. "They're so cute," Ashley's mom said. "I know, and they hang out every day," my mom responded. "One day they're definitely gonna get married." "We will not," Ashley said coyly. "Never say never," I shot out, knowing that we would never. That we could. When we walked into the hall, it was a wide open lobby with sprawling stairs that spiraled to a second floor. The girls were all in their dresses, holding their clutches. The boys wore variations of the exact same suit, just with different colors and patterns on their ties. It was a beautiful venue, the kind of place I hadn't really been in before. The same kind of place about which I had proudly declared, "You can't catch me, you wouldn't catch me dead getting married in one of these." I don't remember much about the evening itself, even though Ashley and I vowed to go it sober. I remember the tiny flower-shaped butter that I thought was soap or chocolate, waiting in line for photographs, dancing to Missy Elliott and Gwen Stefani. When the DJ finally played the class-voted prom song, Eve 6, "Here's to the Night." Really, "Here's to the Night," class voted. Ashley and I slow danced along with many of the others. To the words, I thought about how I'd lied to Ashley, to our friends, about who I was and what I wanted. I saw the one openly gay kid in our class dancing with a girl. I saw John dancing with a girl. We'll stay in touch when you go to college, right? Ashley asked with her hands draped around my shoulders. Ashley, we will always be friends, I said, pulling her closer. And we have all summer. You're right. I love you. I love you too. Among the sea of slow dancers who all tried to stand out by looking the same, I found a friend. Right before my senior year in college, I would come out of the closet. Sitting in Ashley's car one night outside of my parents' house, we chatted in the dark, the red glow of the radio. We were still close, but I started to drift toward new people, the possibility of a new life and identity drawing me further from who I was in high school. I have to tell you something, I said. I half expected her to stop me before I started. Yes, yes, I do, I will. I've always been in love with you too. But when I said the words, she started crying. Why didn't you think you could tell me? She looked at me in the rearview mirror. You never asked, I said. I don't know if I would have even told the truth if she had asked. We cried, awkwardly hugged across the seats in her car. I'm not going to be just your gay best friend, you know. I'm at least 40% still straight. Come on, we can be Will and Grace. She started to soften. Will isn't even the gay one. She was my wing woman to the first gay bar I ever went to, the Den in New Brunswick, where I'd make out with a boy in the bathroom, where a bear would flick my nipple and say, you'll do just fine out here. Years later, Ashley and I smoked a cigarette outside of the kitchen at a fancy venue, much like prom. She wore her long, heavy bridal gown, while I wore a suit with a blue tie and a vest to match the other groomsmen. Only us, she said, lighting up. She still had bangs, just parted to the sides. I had a boyfriend. Do you think they're wondering where we are? I asked, flicking an ash. Who cares? She said. Who cares? I agreed. And I think I finally meant it.
Hi, Ricky.
Hey.
That was so good.
Thank
that
you.
Was
all
amazing.
Thanks to Tim.
Yeah.
Incredible.
No, I'm so glad that you're here. There are so many things that I am curious about. I feel like we could talk for a long time about lots and lots of different things.
Sure.
But in your bio, you talk about running, and you're working on like a book about running. And I was just wondering like how you got into it and like what is it about running that is so compelling for you?
Oh, that's very layered, I feel like. So I started running probably when I was 15. It was a requirement for volleyball practice that we had to go run, and I hated it. And then in adulthood, I ended up loving it. And it's actually a documentary that I'm working on with my partner. We're both ultramarathon runners, and so it kind of explores why we do it in the first place. So without spoilers, I'll leave it there.
That's so cool. The cup. Out of these members of the Know You Tell It creative team, pretend to bow, Kelly Jean Fitzsimmons or Erica Iverson, who would survive the longest in a zombie apocalypse?
I feel like this is a trick question. Oh my gosh, who knows how to start a fire? Does anybody know how to start a fire?
I know how to start a fire.
Okay, Erica, she knows that. Let's go with Erica.
Okay. So, switching it up, here is Terre de Feu, Land of Fire by Ricky Richards and performed by Tim Lindner.
Terre de Feu, Land of Fire. I felt pressured by time. I often waited until the last minute to do things, including buying a prom dress for a prom that wasn't my own. It was May 2009. Classes of my freshman year at New York University were wrapping up, and I was on the hunt for a prom dress to impress in the East Village. I chanced upon a small boutique on East 9th Street called Meg. I was impressed by its simplicity. The curated, neutrally colored, i.e. mainly black, clothing was evenly spaced on bare bones racks across along the edges of the store and was looked over by a single salesperson, Meg herself. My eyes found it quickly. The perfect dress. Except it wasn't. It was four sizes too big and twice my budget. But it was perfect. It was three-quarter length instead of floor length, laced instead of beaded, matte instead of shiny. It wasn't like any other dress I had seen before at prom, most of which seemed to come from a big box store. Its uniqueness appealed to me. I played with the strapless dress in my hands, feeling the bumpy yet delicate black lace over the tan underlining, mentally pairing it with black strappy heels and light makeup. The mixture of desire and guilt and even the thought of spending money on the dress sat on my chest. But I had been working. I could spend my money on something other than tuition, right? The catalog of dresses I borrowed from friends for dances when I was in high school sped through my mind. I went back and forth, not being able to make a decision, possibly to the annoyance of Meg. Spend the money! Don't spend the money! Spend the money! Don't spend the money! She helped me pin the excess fabric so I could simulate the transformation from my usual uniform of a t-shirt and jeans to a state of elegance. Oh, and would be extra for tailoring. To my 19-year-old mind, this dress was a necessity. Nothing says growing up like buying a prom dress when you're broke and not in high school anymore. And my boyfriend at the time, Patrick, was a year younger than me, and he was now a senior at my alma mater, Mount Carmel High School in San Diego, California. Go Sun Devils! We had started dating a year prior when I was a senior and he was a junior. He was in a band that played once at a local coffee shop. I couldn't help myself. We were obsessed with each other. Some called it codependence. We called it love. I fell hard into the safety net of him because the rest of my life hadn't been feeling very safe of late. For our first prom together, he asked me to be his date by baking cookies in the shape of "Got Prom" and had it sitting on the kitchen counter next to a glass of milk when I walked into his house after school. Just a few weeks before his cookie promposal and my impending high school graduation, I stood in his kitchen on the phone, my mom's jaw-clenched voice on the other end, a sure sign of her anger with me. Where are you? My heart raced, my mouth went dry. I'm at Patrick's. Duh. I didn't know you were going there. You should be home. I don't like the way his mom treats his dad. It's not good for you to be around. I think my mom resented their relationship because Patrick's parents seemed to actually like each other. My guess is that she also resented Patrick for taking me away from her, and she let me feel it. I went straight into fix-it mode. I'll come home right now. No, don't bother. Patrick is obviously more important to you anyways. Back and forth we went, Patrick witnessing the one-sided conversation in silence, unsure how to handle me. I begged her to let me make it better somehow, until I was on the floor of the kitchen, struggling for breath in the midst of a panic attack, because I couldn't appease her. Come home and be with her, or don't come home. Both were wrong. At this point, my parents were 3 years into a brutal divorce. My mom's pain made her particularly cruel towards my older sister and me, a symptom, I'm sure, of my dad's cruelty towards her. He struggled with alcoholism and was in a new relationship with his ex-best friend's ex-wife. My sister had been my shelter, But she ran away to college across the country early in our family unraveling and left me alone to deal with the aftermath. A part of me felt abandoned, but I also couldn't wait to find my own place in the world like she was doing. Growing up, our parents set money aside for college, and I thanked them by applying to only out-of-state schools, thereby guaranteeing I was going to be as far away from the mess of home as I could be. I didn't have the wherewithal to be as grateful as I should have been until things went south and it was at risk of being taken away. Somewhere in the middle of preparing for my senior prom and graduation and committing to NYU, arguably one of the pricier joints around, my dad decided he would no longer be sharing my full saved college fund with me, but only a small percentage of it going straight to the school. No other assistance would be provided. The divorce was too expensive. I applied to as many scholarships as I could find, planned to get a job once I arrived in New York, and my mom insisted that no matter what, she would help me realize my dream of graduating from NYU at whatever cost, whatever loan. This was all on the heels of the financial crisis of 2008. My mom's job at a biomedical science startup had stopped paying her because they didn't have funding, but she stayed on for months, believing in their mission and their lie that funding was coming. Money was tight, and it all felt impossible. Prom, round one, was a futile distraction. My friends and I went to the mall to get our makeup done at the MAC counter. Big mistake. Huge. I sat there politely watching them cake my face with product, not knowing how to tell them to stop, please stop. The makeup artist stepped back to look at their work. Honey, you look great. I walked out and went straight to the bathroom to scrape the layers of makeup off as best I could. I couldn't believe my friends talked me into spending money on this clownery. I lowered my t-shirt collar and saw the stark line where it went from orange MAC down to my actual skin color. The guilt I felt at spending the money, along with the devastation of not feeling pretty for my big day, the big senior prom night wrecked my adolescent mind. Between my showy floor-length dress, several inches of bra padding, and overdone makeup, I didn't feel like myself. The mood carried over into the evening. Despite prom being first and foremost a dance, we didn't dance at all, except for about 1 minute of a slow dance. Classic. With a year of college under my belt, I knew I would be able to approach prom, round two, differently. I had a chance at a do-over, a chance to show just how cosmopolitan I had become in the big city. I was going back to high school, even if it was just for one night. Bellied up at Meg's checkout counter, I rode the wave of anxiety and relented, pulling out my hard-earned work-study job money to buy this perfect dress at this perfect East Village boutique. I would have to come back later to pick it up after alterations were finished. How grown up! I found the strappy black heels, thank you Union Square DSW, and set my mind on planning my own simple makeup. There would be no makeup counter at the mall this year. No way. I marched to Sephora and bought myself a big girl brand of lipstick. NARS Terre de Feu. Red. A lipstick in another language? Get out of here. It was elevated. It was passionate and delicate. It meant land of fire. It felt waxy and soft as I tamped it on, rarely gliding to give it that sophisticated feathered French look, light and effortless. Applying it made me feel like Satine from Moulin Rouge, Baz Luhrmann's fantastical 2001 musical romance starring Nicole Kidman as the courtesan falls in love with the Duke, who's actually a penniless writer, then dies of tuberculosis. Putting that lipstick on made me feel tragically romantic. It felt like a dream. The thought of leaving New York and heading back to San Diego for the summer was bittersweet. Sure, I would get to show off this new dress and my mature hair and makeup, but it also meant going back home to live with my mom for a couple months. This brought about its own complications and heightened my feelings of neediness, tremendous love for her, and dread. To me, the dress was an embodiment of my breakaway, and I wasn't sure how this newfound confidence would translate to being back in her house. In avoidance, I put my full focus into prom and Patrick. Prom, round two, went off without a hitch. We had the limo, the friends, and the looks to go with a flawless evening. And one of the best parts, I was able to go without a bra. This dress was fitted well enough that I didn't need one. Thank you, custom tailoring. Patrick and I even danced most of the night. Looking back at the pictures, I still don't really have a sense of whether I achieved the elegance I was going for, but buying that dress and lipstick was the first time I felt like I was stepping out on my own. I still have that lipstick more than 16 years later. The nostalgia is too great to get rid of it. Yeah, general wisdom says lipstick should be thrown away after two, but for those of you who are concerned or have me ending up like Satine, I assure you, it has yet to give me consumption. I still apply the lipstick for special occasions. I still apply the lipstick for special occasions, like tonight. Each time I put on the Terre de Faux red, an appreciation for what it has endured with maid services, even if for a moment. It's a connection to the portal of my previous life and what my mom and I withstood. Nowadays, my mom never fails to share how proud she is of me, specifically how proud she is of my bravery at moving across the country at such a young age, all those years ago. Mm-hmm. Time helped us appreciate each other. We're getting closer to paying off those loans, too. I wore the dress a few times after prom, relishing in the fact that it didn't look like a prom dress. A couple of years ago, I gave it to one of my nieces, who is now nearly the age I was when I picked it out. I have no idea if she ever wore it to dance, but I love knowing she has it. Nothing says growing up like giving your prom dress to the next generation.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.